Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to announce the first in a series of intellectual discussions co-sponsored by Radio Free Palmer and Fireside Books, coming to you from beautiful downtown Palmer, Alaska. In a moment, I'll turn this over to David Cheesham, who will be moderating this discussion, and he'll do the introductions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike Molesky. And this is a part of a series of periodic events, which periodic means whenever I have time or when somebody puts a bug in my ear, as in this case. It's called the Bad Coffee Lecture Series, and that's going from the idea that this bookstore, the website, is goodbooksbadcoffee.com. We're always we're much more proud of the books that we sell than the coffee we serve here. But the idea behind the Bad Coffee Lecture Series is that we need to celebrate the spirit of delight about ideas. We're emphasizing conversation rather than debate. There's so much shouting going on about the in the political universe right now, and there's a place for that. There's certainly a place for debate. When you go in the ballot booth, you have to vote one way or the other. You have to make a yes or no decision. But there's also a place for conversation, which is more about not where we arrive, but how we get there, and celebrating the differences and of our points of view, and seeing if we can celebrate the differences rather than be annoyed by them or insult them or and contribute to the overall sense of despair. So today we're here to discuss Ronald Dworkin's essay about the unity of value called Justice for Hedgehogs. And I hope we can get some help from the panelists here to explain what unity of value means. With us here on my far left is Talis Kohlberg, who is a well-known former attorney general. He was a borough mayor, and now he's the director of the Matsu College. He earned his PhD at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. And then to my immediate left is Charlie Hayes, and he is a former Dallas policeman, U.S. Marine, and author of numerous books. Now, for the people on the web, listening on the web at home, you might want to turn that fan off if you don't mind. I just want to ask you to use your imaginations here so you get a picture of where we might be. We're in a large auditorium. It's packed full. There are marble columns, and there's a you can get. Can you hear the crowd? Just yeah, there you go. Okay. And we have three very nice, very good-looking gentlemen up in front. Now, the people in the audience, it might be a little bit harder for you to use your imagination, but the people at home can imagine that. And the title of the book comes, which is Justice for Hedgehogs. It comes from the saying, a Greek saying, the fox knows many things, but the hedgehog knows one big thing. And either one of you like to start and just tell us a little bit about why that saying is significant and to both politics, morality, why Ronald Dworkin thinks of himself as making a position that's maybe different from the normal course of intellectual thought today.
I'll start.
Very good.
Okay. In 1953, the essayist Isaiah Berlin published an essay called The Hedgehog and the Fox. He did it primarily to distinguish the difference in the way people view the world, and writers in particular. And he was particularly concerned with Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace. People at the time when War and Peace was published in 1865 were thrilled with the stylistic with Tolstoy's style, but they were pretty much chagrined with the way he characterized history in general. And Tolstoy himself thought that to capture history in any kind of a narrative was something of an absurdity, and he seemed to, in War and Peace, make fun of the very idea. But Berlin thought that if you take this idea seriously about the metaphor of the hedgehog and the fox, that you could perhaps make some sense out of value and life in general. And so over time, in academia in particular, this notion of the hedgehog and the fox has been taken to extremes, to the point to where I think most of the people talking about it don't really know what the devil they're talking about. It's as simple, you can break it down as simple as a big picture view of the world versus being taken with details, or you can take the left brain, right brain dichotomies that are so often used, but essentially that's a background.
So you're saying that the Tolstoy had a view of history that was not popular at the time, that celebrated. Now, did he celebrate the fox point of view, that we look at the details, the facts, the empirical evidence, rather than the values?
Well, it was Berlin's opinion that Tolstoy was a fox who thought he was a hedgehog, or at least wanted to be one. He wanted to grasp the significance of value all in one shot instead of a detailed approach. But I don't know. It's a subjective call.
So, but when we're talking about the difference between the two, we're talking about perhaps in terms of values, someone who is going to go from the details and try to work a way up, versus, and that would be the fox, and the hedgehog would start with the big idea and then work way down to the details. Is that where we're at?
Right.
Yeah. Anything you wanted to add?
Well, first of all, thanks for doing this, David. I just to make a couple points before I get into adding what I see as what's going on with this essay is it's nice that you use the bookstore for things like this, and I appreciate that. I'm a little chagrined that you advertised the at least in regard to my great mind as a little bit of an invitation for a pillory publicly, but I know one lesson I've already learned is never agree to be part of a panel before you've read the book that you're being asked to discuss. This is a rugged read in my mind. It's not necessarily one I would have recommended to folks, but it's an interesting one. And I know that when I read Isaiah Berlin's essay years ago, and the reason I read it is I'm half Latvian, and he was born in Latvia. So as a joke, a friend of mine bought me the essay when he died and said, this was a great Latvian, so please read this. And it was a chore to read The Hedgehog, the Fox and the Hedgehog. I think, from my perspective, what Dworkin's trying to do with this particular book is bring it in a broader scheme of, if you look at the period in the West and the Enlightenment, the whole idea that it was to dismantle the power of the monarchy and the state-sponsored church systems that were in place and replace it with all sorts of ideas that in general are based on ideas like age of reason, rationalism, use empiricism, and scientific approach to challenge all presumptions, that you get this great variety of questioning going on, and it's certainly a period of great flourishing of our society in general in the West. But at the same time, it's a lot easier to dismantle institutions than to replace them with something. And I think what Dworkin is conceding, although I'm sure he doesn't sympathize with the hedgehog point of view, ultimately is that when you have dismantled everything and then you try to say, well, what is the guideline for what makes society a unified system? And you realize that it becomes very individualized, and it becomes something of the fox being, yeah, he knows a little bit about everything, but ultimately that represents Western society. There is no particular unity of what's moral and what's ethical, and people can easily slip into it's whatever I want it to be at any given point. And there's a disconcerting aspect to that, and he talks about like Nietzsche and people, or he didn't mention, but you could easily slip Ayn Rand into the idea that it could become a very Darwinistic survival of the fittest result, and morality and ethics could be very good for the strong and the fit and not necessarily for others. And in that context, hedgehogs don't look so bad if you equate them with the old institutions of a church or a religion that has a sense of passing down what morals and ethics are from a higher level that becomes more of a standard that keeps things in order. So I don't think he at all subscribes to that as being the solution, but he's seeing some merit to that in terms of social cohesion. And so is it so bad to be a hedgehog if that's what you're equating it with? It's an interesting exercise. When he gets into trying to define and separate morality and ethics, I think where he wants it to end up is, and he was a lawyer as well as a philosopher, is he says, well, ultimately I think he's saying, well, the best we can do is the rule of law in a legal system which provides some sense of popular support, but except for the last 25 years or 50 years or whatever he did at the end where he said he's not real pleased with the outcome of the rule of law even. And I think that's perhaps just the reality of any perspective in society. The rule of law is okay except for the decisions that have affected us most recently. So he's not even real happy with that as an alternative to what is a unifying force for morality and ethics. The rule of law doesn't necessarily do the job either. So the hedgehog, I think it's a grudging concession that maybe hedgehogs don't have it all wrong after all. But is anyone truly completely a hedgehog or a fox in this day and age? I don't think so. I think everyone in the Western world is a little bit of a blend of both at this point.
I would agree with the last part of that, although Dworkin believes that the unity of value is one big thing. You don't have to be an intellectual to understand it. The more I've thought about this book, I mean, I've read it a couple of times, and I've read the beginning half a dozen times, but the more I think about it, the less I think the hedgehog perspective has that much to do with intellect. I believe it's more of a felt sensation. We don't have to reason about the fact that we know that torturing babies is bad. That we don't have to make an argument for that. You know it intuitively. You know that before you have to offer an explanation about it. So, Dworkin is arguing that the value, I mean, that is ethics is how we behave ourselves, and morality is how we treat other people, is the way he uses the terms. But he says that the unity of value, the value of humanity, the value of that we hold within ourselves and that we use to respect other people with, is one thing, and that it can be defended at any point along the way from the top all the way down. And he argues that for any government to be just, to be legitimate, it has to focus on two principles. The first, it has to treat every individual under whom falls under its domain with equal concern. And the second is that it has to fully respect the right of each individual to make something valuable of their own life, for their own responsibility. So I think he makes the case throughout the book over and over and over again that value, the unity of value, is one thing. And one of the ways he does that is he argues that morality is an independent field of value that owes itself essentially to nothing else. It's subjective in that we're all human, but it's objective in the his notion that there is value and there are things that are true, and we can discern what those are.
And I would say that if you strip away the idea that there is an external force that would guide morality and ethics, and you say it's intuitively apparent what's good and bad, that's not necessarily the case. And
he called that the Gibraltar of all mental blocks.
And what I had brought along, because I kind of expected that might come up, is William James had an excerpt from Nietzsche, which in Nietzsche's part, the sick are the greatest danger for the well, and it goes through a paragraph of Nietzsche explaining why he believes that. And it's the weak who are undermining the vitality of the race, and there's certainly a strong element of social Darwinism in there, but it is a philosophy that, absent any external perspective, you know, I think most people would react negatively to it, but what is there to say that is intuitively wrong? I mean, you can actually make the arguments that Nietzsche makes that may be appalling to most people, but why are they appalling? They're not appalling to everyone. So I think that's one of the problems that Dworkin and anyone else runs into if they try to step into a purely a philosophical realm of we can all come to some agreement, because there's a problem there. It's not.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, you were saying it was intuitively clear something.